धातवः पुरुषेक्षया धातवः पुरुषेक्षया लब्धवीर्यसृजन्ति अन्दम् लब्धवीर्यसृजन्त्यन्दम् संहता प्रकृतेर्बलात् संहता प्रकृतेर्बलात् व्यक्तादयो विकुर्वाना धातवः पुरुषेक्षया लब्धा वीर्यसृजन्त्यन्दम् संहता प्रकृतेर्बलात् व्यक्तादयो विकुर्वाना धातवः पुरुषेक्षया लब्धा वीर्यसृजन्त्यन्दम् संहता प्रकृतेर्बलात् व्यक्त आदय द महातत्व एंड सो ऑन विकुर्वाना अंडरगोइंग ट्रांसफॉर्मेशन धातवः द एलिमेंट्स पुरुषा ऑफ द लॉर्ड इक्षया बाय द ग्लांस लब्ध having attained virya their potencies srijanti they create andam the egg of the universe samhata amalgamated prakriti of nature balat by the power translation as the material elements headed by the mahatattva are transformed they receive their specific potencies from the glance of the supreme lord and being amalgamated by the power of nature they create the universal egg there is no purport to this verse om agyanatimirandhasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha shri chaitanya manobisham स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मायं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं मुखं करोति वाचालं पङ्गुलङ्गयते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुदीनतारिणं वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा so this chapter 22 in the 11th canto which is being discussed right now it's called the elements of material creation in this chapter in the beginning the first one or two verses Uddhava is asking Lord Krishna a few questions about material elements Uddhava actually wants to know that how many material elements are there and he says that he has heard different philosophers describing different numbers of material elements Some philosophers say there are 25, some philosophers say there are 27, some philosophers say there are 24. So Uddhava wants clarification from Lord Krishna in this matter. And so in this chapter, Lord Krishna basically answers those questions of Uddhava. And he also describes what are the material elements, how they are differentiated, and at what stages they are differentiated, and what is the difference between Purusha and Prakriti, what is the difference between the original Lord who is the supreme enjoyer, and Prakriti, which is the material nature, and how it is so difficult to overcome this Prakriti or material nature of the Lord. And for devotees it is very easy because they are surrendered to the, they have caught hold of the lotus feet of the Lord. So this is the summary of the 22nd chapter. And as part of that, in today's verse, in verse number 18, Lord Krishna is describing to Uddhava the process of creation, how creation takes place, how the material elements are manifested, and how the universal egg or the golden egg is manifested by the glance of the Lord. So we see that in this section of the Bhagavatam, lots of technical aspects are being discussed. The creation of universes is being discussed, and there are two types of creation of the universes. The first creation is called as Sarga, and the second creation or the secondary creation is called as Visarga. So Sarga is the creation which happens by the Lord as Mahavishnu, or it is called as the primary creation of this material universe. And Visarga is the creation which happens by the chief living entity in this material world, which is Lord Brahma. So the process of creation, even when we read these verses, we realize that the process of creation is very complicated. It's very difficult to understand. And in different sections of Srimad Bhagavatam, this process of creation has been elaborately discussed, especially in the second canto. In the beginning of the second canto, it's being discussed elaborately how Sarga and Visarga take place. And also in the third canto, in the teachings of Kapila Dev to his mother Devahuti, again Kapila Dev describes the whole process of creation in so much detail. And now we see in the 11th canto some aspects Lord Krishna is discussing with Uddhava about the material elements, about creation, and how different philosophers talk about these material elements in different ways. So ultimately, to completely understand this process of creation by a living entity is impossible, because we are Anu and the Lord is Vibhu. So it's very difficult for us to understand the process of creation. But we can get some appreciation about the process of creation by reading the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam and the various sections of Srimad Bhagavatam. So we see that in the third canto, Kapila Dev describes to Devahuti, and Devahuti is questioning Kapila Dev actually, that how is material universe created, and how is it possible for a living entity to overcome this material nature of the Lord and take to the devotional service of the Lord. And in answer to these questions, Kapila Dev is answering, Kapila Dev is telling Devahuti. And this conversation between Devahuti and Kapila Dev is actually meant for the benefit of everyone. And similarly, we see that Sukhadev Goswami in the second canto asks Parikshit Maharaj also that in the second canto, fourth chapter, he asks him that although this creation is inconceivable even to the demigods, I am eager to know how Lord creates these universes. And then in answer to this question of Parikshit Maharaj, Sukhadev Goswami starts narrating to him the conversation that actually happened between Lord Brahma and his son Narad Muni. And he mentions that the same question was asked by Narad Muni to Lord Brahma in the beginning of the creation. And Narad Muni also wanted to know how this material creation has happened and who has created it and what is Sarga and what is Visarga. Same questions were asked by Narad Muni also to Lord Brahma. And in that section, Lord Brahma actually compliments Narad Muni. And he also mentions, like Kapila Dev mentions to Devahuti, that you are asking these questions for the benefit of the whole human race and also for my own benefit and my own purification, Lord Brahma says. So then Brahma starts describing the process of creation, and today we'll attempt to describe a little bit what is the process of creation and why is it important to understand this process of creation from the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. So when Lord Brahma is describing to Narad Muni, he starts with saying that the Krishna or Govinda is the original, is the origin of all the material and the spiritual universes or everything that is there in this world. So it starts with Krishna, who is a cowherd boy in Golok Vrindavan, and from Krishna the first expansion is Lord Balaram. After Lord Balaram has expanded, from Lord Balaram comes the first Chaturvyuha, which is Vasudev, Sankarshan, Anirudh and Pradyumna. And from this first Chaturvyuha, then expands Lord Narayan, And we see that Lord Narayan, there are so many forms of Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha, and each planet of Vaikuntha, there is a predominating Narayan deity for each planet of Vaikuntha. And from this Narayan, there is the second Chaturviyuha which comes out, which is again Vasudev, Sankarshan, Anirudh and Pradyumna. And from this second Chaturviyuha, then comes Mahavishnu. So Mahavishnu, from the stage of Mahavishnu, the material world starts. Mahavishnu is actually on the borderline of the spiritual world and the material world. And the rest of the incarnation, or the rest of the expansions, are actually in the spiritual world. So Mahavishnu lies down in yogic nidra, in the Karana ocean. And this Karana ocean is also called as Viraja river. This is the border between the material world and the spiritual world. And because he lies down in this Karana ocean, Mahavishnu is also called as Karano Dakshai Vishnu. So in one corner of the spiritual sky, as most of us know, it makes up 3/4 of this whole cosmic manifestation, and the material world is only 1/4. So in one corner of the spiritual sky, there is a cloud which is called as Pradhan. And this Pradhan, it is the sum total of all material energy in its unmanifested form. And in this Pradhan, all the material elements are in their undifferentiated form or unmanifested form. So what is known by undifferentiated? Undifferentiated means all the ingredients are there, all the material elements, the senses, the modes of nature, everything which is required to create this material universe are there in the Pradhan, but they are inert, or they are inactive. They have not yet been manifest. They are still lying in their unmanifest form in the Pradhan. So this Pradhan is the original source of all material creation. And the manifested form of this Pradhan is called as Prakriti, or material nature. So the difference between Prakriti and Pradhan is that the Prakriti is the manifested form and Pradhan is the unmanifested form. So then the next question arises is, how does this Pradhan get converted into Prakriti, or how do the unmanifested elements get manifested? And this is possible only by the Lord, or by His internal potency of time. So Kapila Dev says that this Pradhan consists of 24 elements. Like Uddhava is asking in this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that how many elements are there? I have heard that different people or different philosophers are describing that there are different number of elements. So here Kapila Dev mentions in the third canto that the Pradhan contains 24 elements. And these 24 elements consist of the five gross elements, which is earth, water, fire, air and ether. And then the five sense objects, or tanmantras it is called, which is smell, touch, form, taste and sound. Then there are the five working senses, or karmendriyas, hands, legs, voice, genitals, anus. And then the five knowledge acquiring senses, which are known as the jnanendriyas, which are the eyes, ears, nose, tongue and skin. And so this makes up 20, and then the next three elements are the mind, intelligence and false ego. And the 24th element is called as, Kapila Dev describes the 24th element as the polluted consciousness, or which is the original spirit soul. But some people also describe the 24th element as Pradhan, which is the root of everything. And the 25th element, which is time, is imparted by the Lord to convert this Pradhan into Prakriti. So many Puranas and Upanishads, and in various Puranas it is mentioned that this Pradhan is originally coming from Brahman. Now Brahman is Brahman, or the Brahma Jyoti, is the spiritual effulgence of the divine body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it is the basis, the spiritual energy, or Brahma Jyoti, is the basis of the material energy. So in the spiritual, in this Brahma Jyoti, or in this Brahman, there is no trace of any material elements, or there is no trace of any modes of material nature, because it is completely spiritual. And therefore, because there is no trace of any modes of material nature, it is called as Nirgun Brahman. And this is what actually the Jnanis are after, to attain this Nirgun Brahman. And then there is the Saguna Brahman. So this Saguna Brahman is actually Pradhan. Saguna Brahman means the gunas are present in this in Brahman. So all the 24 elements and all the modes of material nature are present, and therefore it is called as Saguna Brahman or Pradhan. So we see that the Pradhan is made up of 24 elements, and then to convert this Pradhan into Prakriti, Mahavishnu glances at the Pradhan to convert it into prakriti. He agitates the pradhan by his glance using time element, which is the 25th element, and that gets converted into prakriti. So Mahavishnu's glance carries various shaktis, and all this is described again by Kapila Dev in the third canto. And these various shaktis are the Kriya Shakti, Ichha Shakti, Jnana Shakti and Kala Shakti, in which Kala Shakti plays the major role of agitating the pradhan into Mahatattva. And also the jivas or the living entities, that is all of us, conditioned souls, are also impregnated through the glance of Mahavishnu into pradhan. So the glance carries not only all these shaktis, but it also carries the conditioned jivas into the pradhan. And that is how we all, the 84 lakh species of life or 8.4 million species of life, come out. So in fact in the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita also the Lord says, Sarva yoneshu kaunteya murtaya sambhavantiha tapam brahma mahadyonir aham bija pradapita. He says that I am the seed giving father of all living entities in this material world. I impregnate this Brahman, Mahat Brahman or this Pradhan with my glance and with all the living entities, and that is how life is created, or that is how the living entities come into being in this material world. So this Brahma Mahat Yonir or this sum total of the material substance or Pradhan, which is sometimes called as Brahman, that is impregnated by the Lord through his glance, and this Saguna Brahman then gets agitated. So the Lord says that I impregnated and I am the cause, my glance or my energies are the cause of agitating this, and then the material universe starts. This is described by the Lord even in the Bhagavad Gita in the 14th chapter. So thus the Lord glances at Pradhan, he agitates this Pradhan, and the Pradhan gets converted into Mahatattva, what we read over here, Vyakta Adaya, the Mahatattva. So this Pradhan gets converted into Mahatattva, and then eventually life is possible in this material world. So all this is possible only, we see that the Pradhan is there, there is a cloud in the spiritual sky, but it does not get converted into Mahatattva automatically. The ingredients are there for the cosmic manifestation to start or for the material universes to start, but they don't start automatically. They require the glance of the Lord, or they require that internal potency in the form of time of the Lord to convert it. Otherwise no agitation is possible or no creation is possible. So Srila Prabhupada mentions, and Srila Prabhupada gives an example. It's a very powerful example which Prabhupada gives throughout Bhagavatam. He says that this is similar to we seeing the nipples on a goat's neck. So if we see that they are nipples, but you will, even though you milk them, there will be no milk coming out. There will be no milk coming out of these nipples of the goat, even though you try and try. They just look like nipples. This is the example Prabhupada gives. The second example Prabhupada gives is that a woman cannot give birth to a child until she has been impregnated by a man. So Prabhupada in fact describes that she may go in the labor ward and she may cry, and she may act as if she is in labor pain. But since she has not been impregnated by a man, there is no birth possible of a child. So similarly, we see that material scientists, they look at this material nature and they say, oh, it is so wonderful, there are material nature, there are so many actions and reactions happening, everything is happening automatically. That is what the material scientists claim. But they do not know that the material nature, although it is an energy of the Lord, it cannot do anything unless and until it has been glanced upon, or there is some spiritual energy which has been imparted into it. So only then, once it is impregnated or once it has been glanced upon by the Lord, is life possible. And gradually all the elements, all the senses, all the modes of nature then gradually start differentiating and start manifesting. In the Brahma Samhita also there is some description of creation given. So Brahma Samhita describes this creative element, and which is carried by the glance, through the glance of the Lord, as Shambhu. So the glance of the Lord is actually carried by Shambhu or Shiva Tattva. And then this Shiva Tattva or this Shambhu Tattva manifests as various Rudras or various Shivas in the material world. So we see, usually we know, like generally when we hear about Lord Shiva, we always think that Lord Shiva's work is only to destroy everything. But we see that Lord Shiva or Shambhu also has an important role to play in the creation, even during the creative stage, even Lord Shiva has an important role to play. So thus gradually in this cooking pot of Pradhan, this Pradhan is compared to a cooking pot. So in this cooking pot of Pradhan, or you call it Saguna Brahman, or Krishna calls this Mahad Yonir Brahma in the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. It is called differently in different sections of the Srimad Bhagavatam, or different Shastras call it differently. So in this cooking pot of Brahman, Pradhan, we see that not only the ingredients are present, not only in this cooking pot the ingredients have been provided by the Lord, but there is also fire required and there is also stirring required to convert anything which is being cooked in a pot into some palatable dish. So similarly, this agitation or this stirring is provided by the Lord. Not only does He provide all the ingredients in this for this cooking pot, but He also does the stirring, or He also agitates this Pradhan to get converted into Mahatattva. So this happens by the glancing of the Lord, and then the different potencies or the different elements start coming out. And here the example can be given of a potter. A potter takes clay and then he converts it into a pot. So the Lord is like the potter and the clay is like Pradhan, and the Lord then agitates it. The clay is also provided by the Lord only, but then He agitates it, or He then converts it into a pot, which is the Mahatattva, from which the material universes start creating. So as soon as the Lord glances at Pradhan, the first thing which happens is the Pradhan gets converted into Mahatattva through the time element, which is carried by Shambhu into this Pradhan. And this Mahatattva, the first thing which comes out are the three modes of material nature. They were already present in the Pradhan, but they get agitated or they get stirred up into action. And the false ego. These are the first two things which come out of Pradhan. And then there are various combinations which happen. So the false ego and the mode of goodness, the false ego combines with the various modes and the different elements start coming out. So the false ego combines with the mode of goodness, and the devatas or the demigods are produced, and the mind is produced when false ego and mode of goodness combine. Then when false ego and the mode of passion combine, the various indriyas are produced, that is the karmendriyas, the jnanendriyas, the working senses, the knowledge acquiring senses, and the intelligence is a product when mode of passion and false ego combine. And then when the false ego and mode of ignorance combine, then the gross elements are produced, that is earth, water, fire, air, ether. So these gross elements plus the sense objects or the tanmantras are produced, which is sense, touch, form, and so on. So we see that different things are produced when the modes of material nature and the false ego start combining. And this is how the different elements get manifested or different elements get separated. And then they start the work of creation. So everything is subtle. Initially, like, even though the gross senses, the gross elements, the karmendriyas, the jnanendriyas, all these are coming out, but they are all coming out in their subtle forms. So the creation always happens from subtle to gross. And so we see that in the various sections of Srimad Bhagavatam, step by step, all this is described. So everything is ready now. All the elements are ready. Time has agitated the Pradhan and all the elements are ready for the material creation. And at this stage, then Mahavishnu expands himself and there is a golden egg, like we see over here, that they create the universal egg. So all the elements are ready and then the golden egg or the universal egg is created. Now this universal egg or this golden egg has different layers on top of it. And it starts with water. The first layer is water, and then there is air, then there is fire, then there is ether, then there is ego, then Mahatattva, then Pradhan. So like this, there are different layers which are covering this golden egg. And it is mentioned in the Bhagavatam that each layer is 10 times thicker than the previous layer. So that is why it is described that it is very difficult to cross all the coverings of the universe and enter into the spiritual world, because the layers are so thick, 10 times thicker. So by the time we get to Pradhan, it must be so thick, the layer. So once this universal egg or the golden egg has been created, then Mahavishnu enters into the golden egg as Garbhodakshai Vishnu. So Prabhupada mentions that there are three Purusha avatars. Like we saw, there was the first Chaturvyuha, then Narayan, then second Chaturvyuha, and then Mahavishnu came out. So there are three Purusha avatars. The first one is Mahavishnu, The second one is Garbhodakshai Vishnu, which enters, Mahavishnu expands as Garbhodakshai Vishnu and enters into the material universe. And the third one is Shirodakshai Vishnu, which is the super soul of every atom in this material universe. And there is also one more form of the Lord in this material universe, which is called as the Virat Rupa or the Virat Purusha. This is an imaginary form of the Lord, and this is mainly meant for people who cannot appreciate the beautiful form, the original form of Govinda. Like we know Govinda Madhi Purusham. They cannot appreciate this beautiful form of Govinda, and they can only appreciate some material form of the Lord. And this Virat Rupa is meant to satisfy such spiritual seekers. So, but for us, for devotees, the ultimate, although there are so many different types of Vishnus, for the devotees who are more spiritually advanced or who are people who are more spiritually evolved, their ultimate object of worship is only Govinda or the original Krishna, the original cowherd boy in Vrindavan. So we see that everybody is trying to search for the Lord, but people are trying to search for the Lord in different ways. And worshipping this Virat Rupa by spiritual seekers, it is at least the beginning of some theism. At least it's a very rudimentary form, but at least people start appreciating that these different material elements, the Lord has a form. This Virat Rupa has a form, and he is manifest or he is present in this material universe. So that is the main purpose of Virat Rupa, to satisfy or to begin somebody's devotional life, to begin some form of theism in people. And this Virat Rupa is said to, the body of the Virat Rupa is said to represent the different planetary systems. So the feet or the soles of the Virat Rupa, all the Patal, the hellish planetary systems, it is called as Patal Loka. The hellish planetary systems are the feet. The middle planetary systems or the earthly planets are the belly of this Virat Rupa. And the highest planetary systems, which is Swarg Loka, Jana Loka, Tapa Loka and Brahma Loka, these are all the head of this Virat Rupa. So it helps us to visualize, this Virat Rupa helps people to visualize that the Lord has a form in this material universe. But spiritually intelligent people only worship Krishna, or they are only after the worship of Govinda or Krishna. In fact, there is a very nice pastime in the Krishna book which describes that how even Mahavishnu always wants to have darshan of this original Krishna or this original Govinda, the cowherd boy of Vrindavan. So it is mentioned that there was once a Brahmin in the kingdom, and this Brahmin keeps losing his child. As soon as his child is born, his child is lost. He just disappears. And this Brahmin was Vedic times, and it is said that in Vedic times, the king is responsible for anything that happens to the citizens, and especially to the Brahmins. Kings are especially meant to protect the Brahmins. So this Brahmin used to get so disturbed, because each of his child was getting lost on childbirth. So he used to go outside the kingdom and he used to cry out that this king is useless, he is not able to give protection to a Brahmin. How can the child die before the father has died? The child should actually do the antim sanskar or the final rites for the father, and then only the child should leave the world. So this king is not ruling properly, he is not a proper representative of the citizens. So the Brahmin every time used to go and keep cursing the king like that. So one day Arjuna happened to be there in that kingdom, and then Arjuna hears this Brahmin come and curse, one of his child was lost, and Arjuna hears that this is going on, that the Brahmin is right, this cursing the king and blaming the king for whatever is happening to his children. So then Arjuna says that why are you talking like this, because the Brahmin was also mentioning that are there any Kshatriyas present in this kingdom, or they are just acting like Kshatriyas, dressing up like Kshatriyas, they are just actors in a drama. So Arjuna says, no, it is not like Kshatriyas are not present, I am present over here, you tell me what is the problem. So the Brahmin says that like this my almost 7 or 8 of his children had been lost, they always disappear at childbirth, I don't know what I should do. And then Arjuna promises him, he says that during your next childbirth, you call me, I will personally be present there and I will be vigilant. I will be like a security guard outside your home, and I will ensure that your next child is not disappearing during childbirth. So the Brahmin goes back, he doesn't trust Arjuna so much, but he calls him. He says that, okay, I'll call you when my wife is about to deliver. So he calls Arjuna, and then Arjuna also promises him, that if I am not able to protect your child, then I will enter into the fire. Because Arjuna was a Kshatriya, so his promises were also in the Kshatriya spirit. And this Brahmin calls Arjuna. He says, my wife is about to deliver. Can you please come and see what's going on? So Arjuna is present over there with his sword in hand and he's walking up and down. But as soon as the child is born, the child disappears. And Arjuna is really shocked. He feels that what happened? I didn't see anyone coming. I didn't see anything happening. Where did the child disappear? So he's really distressed and he tells the Brahmin that, and the Brahmin again says, see, you were not able to protect my child. He has disappeared. So then Arjuna tells the Brahmin that I had promised you that I will enter into the fire if I'm not able to locate your child. So let me try locating your child, otherwise I'm going to give up my life. And then Arjuna, as usual, because he was a surrendered devotee of the Lord, he goes to Lord Krishna for help. And he asks Krishna that I will have to enter the fire if you don't help me search for the child of this Brahmin. So Krishna says, okay, don't worry, we'll search. So they go through, Krishna takes Arjuna throughout all the planetary systems in the material world. They start right from the hellish planets and they go right up to Brahmaloka. But they are not able to locate the child of this Brahmin. And then Krishna, because Krishna is the super soul and Krishna is the Lord, so he actually knew that where the child is. So then he tells Arjuna, okay, let us cross this material universe and let us see where the child is. So he gives Arjuna the spiritual power to cross the material, because a jiva in his material body cannot actually cross the material universe or the layers of the material universe. But because of being empowered by Lord Krishna, then he takes Arjuna with him on his chariot and then they approach Mahavishnu. And when they reach Mahavishnu lying in the Karana Sagara or the Viraja river, they find that the children are over there with Mahavishnu. And then Krishna starts talking to Mahavishnu and Mahavishnu tells that I actually wanted to have darshan of you, O Lord. Because actually Mahavishnu is Krishna only. It is Krishna only who has expanded as Mahavishnu and who is doing all the creation. But even Mahavishnu was yearning for the darshan of the Shyam Sundar or the Govinda form of the Lord, the 200 form of the Lord. And that is why he created this whole pastime of taking away all the children of the Brahmin. Because he knew that Arjuna and Krishna are both are protector of the Brahmins. So he knew that Krishna will bring Arjuna searching for the children of the Brahmins and in this way I will be able to have darshan of the Lord. So thus we see that although there are so many Purusha Avataras and there is the Virat Rupa which actually manifests after this universal egg is formed to give guidance to Brahma how to create the universe, but still our object of worship is only Govinda or only Krishna, the 200 form of the Lord. So after we study all this creation, I know it was a very technical class and I can see people are really feeling lost in the class and yawning. But you know, we sometimes feel that why is it necessary to study the creation and to study so much of technical details from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Sometimes as devotees we have this tendency that let me just skip through all these technical aspects and let me just directly go to the pastimes of the Lord or to some pages of the Bhagavatam where there is some rasa. This creation and this technicalities, this material elements, sense objects, all this is very dry subjects. There is no rasa in them. So let me just skip them. That is the tendency sometimes we have. So I was listening to a lecture by Devamrit Maharaj and he explains that it is so necessary for devotees to systematically study the Srimad Bhagavatam. And there are various reasons why first, you know, especially in the second canto and the third canto, creation is described in so much detail. So the first reason it says is that Srila Prabhupada says that Bhagavatam should be studied systematically. One should not skip the 9 cantos and directly go to the 10th canto. Or one should not skip such technical aspects about creation and directly, you know, just go to the pastimes of the Lord and try to relish the pastimes of the Lord. And the reason for this is that since we are in the conditioned form of life still, we are still in the conditioned stage. So if we directly jump to the pastimes of the Lord in the 10th canto, then we will tend to take these pastimes very cheaply. Because Krishna is just playing like a human, like one of us, he is playing in Vrindavan. He is performing loving pastimes with his devotees, he is stealing butter, he is playing with cowherd boys, he is going and grazing, taking the cows for grazing. When we read such pastimes, we may take Krishna very cheaply. So Prabhupada says that it is very necessary for devotees to first read about creation, because that establishes the godhood of God. It is very important for us to have some awe and reverence, or to develop that healthy sense of fear. Because once we know that, oh, Krishna is so gigantic, Krishna is Mahavishnu, he is creating all these material universes. Only from the pores of his skin so many universes are coming out. And how just by his glance he can impregnate material nature and the whole cosmic manifestation can happen. So when we read about all these glories or all these opulences of the Lord, we don't take his pastimes in the 10th canto cheaply, because we realize that he is the Supreme Lord, he is the creator, he is the proprietor. When we realize all these things, then we have that awe and reverence, and we will respectfully, or we will be able to better appreciate the Sammam Bonam, that is the 10th canto. So it is mentioned that we always, even when we take darshan of the deities, we should start with the lotus feet and then gradually progress towards the face. That is the way of taking darshan. Similarly, when we read Bhagavatam, we start with the lotus feet. So the first few cantos are called as the lotus feet of the Lord. And then we gradually progress to the Sammam Bonam, which is the 10th canto, and which is called as the smiling face of the Lord. So that is the first reason, that we learn to appreciate the Godhood of God, and without proper appreciation of Godhood of God, we may not be able to relish the pastimes in the right mood. The second reason is that when we hear about creation, we at least come to know that there is a creator behind the creation. As we hear in the SSR series of lectures by Radha Gopinath Prabhu, he continuously mentions there that a creation implies a creator. Any creation we see, even in this material world, whether we see a car, whether we see big technologies nowadays which are coming up, like the MP3 players, and even if we see an ordinary chair, there is a creator which has created all these things. So similarly, when we hear about creation, this whole material world, there is a creator behind this creation. And especially we see that scientists don't appreciate this. Like we said in the earlier section of our lecture, that scientists always feel that, oh, these actions and reactions, everything is happening by chance. And it is all happening by some chemical combination or by some combination of some elements, and everything is happening automatically. And they also give reason that the whole material universe has come into creation by the Big Bang theory, we know. They never acknowledge that there is a creator which has actually created this wonderful creation. And in this matter, we all know about Sir Isaac Newton. So Isaac Newton was actually a theist. He used to believe that God has created this universe. So once Isaac Newton, but he had a friend who was a total atheist, who always used to say that the creation has come about by chance, and that friend was a propagator of the Big Bang theory. So Isaac Newton wanted to establish to him that how the creation has not happened by Big Bang, but it has happened, there is an intelligent hand behind it. So Isaac Newton invites this friend to his home. And when this friend comes into the home of Isaac Newton, he finds that there are so many iron pieces cluttered about, lying. The whole house is in a mess. There are some chains lying somewhere. There are some pulleys. There is some motor. There are some bulbs. And there are some metallic balls. Everything is just lying scattered about. So he asks Sir Isaac Newton that, what is all this? All these things are scattered about. What is all this going on in your house? And Isaac Newton tells him that, you come back tomorrow and I will give you the reply for this question. So the friend was very eager. Isaac Newton had actually aroused his inquisitiveness. So the friend comes back the next day. And on the next day, when he comes inside Isaac Newton's house, he is amazed to see that there is a very beautiful creation. All the metallic balls he had seen are actually on some pulleys, on some chains. And there is one central big ball. And all these metallic balls are nicely going around the central big ball, and there is some light emanating from the big ball, and everything is going on so nicely. He saw a very nice arrangement in Isaac Newton's house. And then he asks him that, yesterday I saw everything was lying cluttered about, but what is this today? What has happened? How did this wonderful creation happen? And Isaac Newton wanted to drive home the point that there is somebody who has created everything. So he tells him that, oh, yesterday you saw everything lying cluttered about, and then suddenly I was in the kitchen, but suddenly there was a big bang that happened. And then when I came out of the kitchen, I saw that all this had automatically started happening. Everything had assembled and the whole system had started operating. And then the friend laughs at Isaac Newton. He says that, have you gone crazy? How is that possible? That just the bang, big bang you heard, and now everything is operating so nicely. So then Isaac Newton says, he says that when you are not able to believe that such a small arrangement, mechanical arrangement, which has fitted in my room, was not possible by a big bang, how are you believing that this whole cosmic manifestation or this whole material world, which is operating so precisely, the sun always rises in the east, it's not that some days the sun rises in the west, and the sun always rises at a particular time, sets at a particular time, the seasons happen properly. So how are you believing that all these precise things are happening without a creator behind it? So Isaac Newton then drives home the point that always when there is a creation, it implies a creator. There has to be an intelligent person who has created the whole universe. So we see that life always comes from life. As we saw that the pradhan, although the material elements were there, but nothing could happen. Mahavishnu had actually to glance at it with his internal potency. Only then the pradhan got converted into Mahatattva. So Mahavishnu is called as the super soul of the pradhan. And then when the universal eggs have been created, after the material elements have been separated, then he has to enter as Garbhodakshai Vishnu in the universal egg or in the golden egg so that further creation can take place. So Garbhodakshai Vishnu is called as the super soul of the material universe. And even after the material universe, all the planetary systems, everything has been created, then Garbhodakshai Vishnu expands as Kshirodakshai Vishnu. And he enters into each and every atom, each and every living entity and each and every atom in this material universe. And that is how life comes. So Bhagavatam is again and again establishing that life has only come from life. Life never comes from matter. Just matter is present, then it cannot become possible for universes to get created by all the elements being present or all the ingredients being present. So that is one more purpose why we read about creation in the Bhagavatam, that we come to know that there is a creator. It gets established that somebody is there, some hand is there, some superior energy or some superior truth is there behind this creation. And then third reason why it is necessary to systematically study all these aspects about creation is that it establishes that there is a proprietor. So the person who has created is also the person who is the proprietor or who is the owner of all these material energies. So all these energies belong to the Lord. This appreciation comes when we read the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. And we come to know that this whole material world which is there is owned by someone. It is not just meant for my enjoyment. And it is not belonging to anybody, so I can enjoy it the way I want. And for example, if somebody has a house and I'm just wandering down the street, can I enter that person's house without acknowledging that person's proprietorship over the house? I just enter the house, I roam around in the house, I wander through the rooms of the house, I open the doors of the closets, I open the doors of the fridge, I take whatever I want. No, it won't be appreciated. If I do that, they'll call the police in Middle Park. So, but here in the material world, we don't acknowledge that there is a proprietor to all these things which are present in the material world. We are just wandering about nicely in the material world and we are thinking that it is all meant for my enjoyment. It does not belong to anybody. That is what our whole outlook is towards the material world. In fact, most of the people, most of the materialists don't acknowledge that there is a creator or there is a proprietor behind this material creation. And actually this is the expertise of Krishna. Because Krishna creates the material world so effortlessly and so instantaneously that nobody can realize that there was a creator behind this wonderful creation. And because people can't see or because people can't realize that there was a creator, they think that because I can't see or I can't realize that there was a creator, that is why there is no creator. And then they believe that the whole creation has come about by chance or by Big Bang or by just combination of some material elements. But it is better that people think in the other way, and that appreciation will come by reading about the process of creation from the Srimad Bhagavatam. That when I'm not able to see someone behind this creation, that means that person is so expert, he has so effortlessly created everything that nobody can realize his hand is there. That is a better way of appreciating when somebody is not able to see that there is a proprietor or there is a creator behind this world. And that is the proof of Krishna's expertise, when someone is not actually able to realize that there is a creator behind this creation. So that is one more reason. So the first reason is we have come to appreciate the godhood of God, and that is why it is necessary to study the process of creation in detail. The second reason why it is important to understand the process of creation is so that we learn to appreciate that there is a creator, that it has not happened by Big Bang or it has not happened by chance. The third reason is that having established that there is a creator, then we realize that the creator is the proprietor. There is an owner for this material world, and it is not meant for my enjoyment. It is meant for his enjoyment, or if he has created it, so he, I have to acknowledge his proprietorship. And the fourth reason, which is very important for devotees as well, is that by reading about the process of creation, we gradually develop detachment from this material world. Because we come to realize, when we read in detail how the Pradhan was created, how there are the different elements present in the Pradhan, and then how the Lord glances at the Pradhan, and his glance is carried by Shambhu, and even the Jivas get impregnated through his glance in the Pradhan. So by reading all these aspects, we come to know that we as Jivas, as the souls, are different from this material nature. Because many philosophies say that everything gets finished, when the world is finished, everything is finished, or when you are finished, there is no more existence after death. But when we read about the creation, and when we read about the process especially of how different elements and how the Jivas have come about, we come to know that we are separate from this material energy. We also come to know what is our source, or who is our source, and who is the source of this whole material creation. And then we come to know that it is better for us to worship that source, because he has created us. Our duty is to worship that source in gratitude. So this study, this analytical study of the creation, gradually develops a sense of detachment inside us. In fact, it is said that knowledge and detachment both come by reading the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. Like it is said, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janayatyasu Vairagam Jnanam Chayad Ahaitukam. Jnanam means knowledge, and Vairagyam means detachment. Both of these things come automatically when we read the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Srimad Bhagavatam, in Kali Yuga especially, Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of the Lord. Even when the sages of Naimisharanya, they ask Sutta Goswami that when the Lord has left this world, where has religion taken shelter? Who is there to guide mankind, especially in the dark age of Kali? And they are answered by Sutta Goswami that Krishna Swadhamo Pagate, that Krishna has already gone to the spiritual world, but he has left behind the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is non-different from Krishna. So when we read the Srimad Bhagavatam, or when we read about all these things, we are directly associating with Lord Krishna. So we should not skip these parts of the process of creation or these technical aspects, thinking that they are not required or they are not having any rasa in them. In fact, Sanatan Goswami says that every syllable of the Srimad Bhagavatam is saturated with pure love of Krishna. So only when we continuously read the Bhagavatam, when we continuously associate with Bhagavatam, which is non-different from Krishna, then that purifying effect will happen in our heart. Because Krishna is the super soul, and when he sees that we are so nicely and submissively or systematically trying to study Srimad Bhagavatam or take shelter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, then he, from our heart, he clears up all the lust or all the undesirable things. Hridhavantasti abhadrani, it is said in the Bhagavatam, that all the abhadra or all the inauspicious things from our heart are cleared up. And that is how we gradually develop detachment, because our heart has become purified. And then the Bhagavatam re-establishes our lost relationship or the lost love which we have for Krishna in our heart. So that is one more purpose of reading Srimad Bhagavatam, because it gradually develops detachment in our heart, and it gradually helps us to re-establish our lost relationship with Krishna. So with that we'll end here. It's already time up. And are there any questions or comments or corrections?
Yes.
Thank you. Sorry?
Duties versus specific personal boundaries. So how to balance all the things?
What about duties, Prabhu?
There are more attachment towards the detachment of with other things, towards the relationship and the things. So how to balance that?
So you are asking that when we hear about Srimad Bhagavatam and we develop detachment, then how to balance our detachment towards the family members?
Attachment and detachment.
So Keshav Prabhu is mentions in the in our Bhakti Vaibhav class. We are studying the pastime of King Puranjana right now, and that is a whole allegory. And in that, by studying that allegory of Puranjana, Keshav Prabhu was mentioning that this whole allegory is meant in this section of the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam to gradually develop detachment. And they get not only develop detachment from the material world, like you were mentioning, but also to gradually develop detachment from even our relationships or even our family members. But by detachment, we don't mean that we are indifferent to them or we don't have any love for them. Because everybody is children of Krishna. Like all living entities are children of Krishna. So if we can't love our own family members, then how will we develop love for Krishna? But that love has to be based with keeping Krishna in the center. So the love, Keshav Prabhu was again and again mentioning, because in the pastime of King Puranjana, his attachment to his wife is based on the material platform, how he wants to enjoy his wife, and he totally wastes his whole life in enjoying with his wife, producing so many children, getting them married, and then having so many grandchildren. And that is what we see even in material world, in a normal conditioned life, we see that people are doing that. That is the whole aim of life, how to get married, how to have children, how to get them settled. That is the whole aim people are living towards. But it is mentioned that a human being should not waste his time. There should not be attachment on the bodily platform. But keeping Krishna in the center, we should have attachment to our family members. So if our family members are devotees especially, then there is no need even to get detached. Bhakti Vinod Thakur says that when I was worshipping Krishna, he said that I suddenly had the vision, because his family, everybody was devotees. So he suddenly had the vision that his house is Golok Vrindavan and all his family members are servants of Krishna who are assisting him in worshipping Krishna. So if our family members are devotees, then there is no need of even detachment, because then Golok Vrindavan is present in our house. Then all the family members can gather together and worship Krishna nicely. But even if they are not devotees, then also we should have affection for them. But Keshav Prabhu mentions that when we have affection for them, that doesn't mean we compromise our principles of Krishna consciousness. Especially when we visit them or they visit us over here in Melbourne, we don't compromise our principles of Krishna consciousness because they are not devotees. So we don't, if they are not, for example, offering and eating, then we also don't start doing that. Or if they are eating onion garlic, or they are watching, because most of the people who are karmis are addicted to watching TV and movies and all these things. So it's not that we fall in their ways. So we don't compromise our principles of Krishna consciousness, but rather we see that, you know, they are also conditioned souls who need to be preached to. So we gradually try to give them association and bring them into Krishna consciousness. So that is the way I feel we can balance both these things, detachment and still have affection for them.
From that also, in Puranjana's story, he's killing animals, hunting.
Yes.
So he's killing, they are waiting for him.
Yes.
Ranaji is telling the whole thing, the whole, what you are doing. You are trying to love your wife only and you are killing everybody else. So that's also very bad. So you have to have knowledge and balance.
So when Mahavishnu glances at Pradhan, so his glance is carried by Shambhu, and that glance consists of time element. And then this time element, when it comes in contact with all the material elements which are already present in Pradhan, they get stirred up or they get agitated. And the first thing which gets stirred up are the modes of material nature. And the first manifestation which comes out when this Pradhan gets converted into Mahatattva by the glance of the Lord is the false ego. So then there are, the false ego combines with the modes of nature, because these are the first two things which come out from Pradhan. And the false ego combines with mode of goodness to produce all the demigods and the mind. Then the false ego combines with the mode of passion to produce all the senses, the working senses, the knowledge acquiring senses and the intelligence is produced. And then the false ego combines with the mode of ignorance to produce all the sense objects. And there was one more thing I said about. Yeah, and the gross elements. Thank you, Mr. So the false ego combines with mode of ignorance to produce the 5 gross elements, which is water, fire, air, ether, and sky, and also the sense objects or the tanmantras, the smell, touch, form, taste. So there were the first 20 elements, which is the 5 sense objects, 5 working senses, 5 knowledge acquiring senses, and the 5 gross elements. And then after these 20, there are the next 3 are the mind, intelligence and false ego. And the 24th element, Kapila Dev says it's the polluted consciousness, that is the conditioned soul. But in some places it is also mentioned, and that will come in the next few verses, Krishna is explaining that to Uddhava, that how different philosophers are calling different, are saying there are different number of elements. So in some places it is said that this 24th element is Pradhan itself. So there are these, all these elements which are present within Pradhan, plus the 24th element is Pradhan. Some people say that 24th element is time. Like I mentioned, the 25th element was time, which combines with the Pradhan and then all the things are manifested. But some people say that 24th element itself is time. So in the same lecture by Devamrit Maharaj, which I was hearing on this section, Devamrit Maharaj says that Krishna, like we mentioned, Krishna is an expert creator. So he says that a creator or an artist, he's an expert artist who has created this whole cosmic manifestation. So an artist doesn't do the same thing in the same way every time. Any artist, when he creates a work of art, like we have Rasanandini Mataji here, who's a very nice artist. So she will not create the same thing every time. There will be some details which will be different, even if the same work is being reproduced. So similarly, Krishna also, when he, because the material, you know, the material universe comes into being, again goes back into the pores of Mahavishnu, again it comes into being. So this has been happening since time immemorial. So every time Krishna, when he creates this material universe, the principle of creation is the same, but the details can be different, Devamrit Maharaj explains. So that is why these different philosophies come up, because Vedas and Upanishads are recording all these things since time immemorial. So in different Vedas or in different Puranas, there are different details of the creation which are mentioned. So in some Puranas it is said 24th element is time, in some sections it is said 24th element is Pradhan. Kapila Dev says to Devahuti in the 3rd canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that the 24th element is polluted consciousness or the conditioned jiva. So in different places it's mentioned in different ways. No, Krishna gives specific answers. But he says that different philosophers say it differently. And because the material elements are so many and different philosophers have different opinions, that is why they come up with different numbers.
Philosophers can have different views, but what Krishna's views will come in the later chapter?
Yes, it comes in the later chapter. But I, from the way I just skimmed through the chapter, I have not read the whole chapter, but I don't think Krishna establishes that there are such fixed number of elements. Because as we said that the details are different during every creation. In fact, Uddhava mentions in the first, I think first or second verse of this chapter, that he has heard there are 28 elements. So he also calls the false ego, sorry, the Mahatattva is also one of the elements he calls. So Uddhava has heard there are 28, Kapila Dev says there are 24, so, and Kapila Dev is also Lord Krishna himself. So it's mentioned differently in different sections.
As you said, the overall thing, Krishna says everybody is correct.
Yeah.
Because whatever way they are saying, nobody is wrong. Krishna says they are 28, but still whatever people are saying is also correct. Krishna is giving their view.
Yes. So it's time up now. We'll end here. Thank you very much. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Yes.